Matty Stewart, Mick Sharkey with us for the next hour and a half. Gentlemen, what a weekend.
It was. It was a week. There's been a lot of Côte d'Azur-ing with this weekend, hasn't
has
there?
So, you two might as well just get married.
Yes, exactly. I've always been against the invasion of Sydney on Melbourne, but I have no issue at all now with Everest on Caulfield Cup Day. It falls 2 out of 3 because of the NRL issue, but we didn't miss the Sydney jockeys. It was a tale of two cities, wasn't it? Sydney with its crowd, Melbourne without it. It was a feast that I don't think we needed to roll into one. So I thought it was fantastic viewing. And Shark, the big difference for me in watching both was how important the crowd was for everything about the Everest. It was Channel 7 did a great job showcasing the crowd. And one of the commentators yesterday said, I've never seen 10,000 look like 10 million. And James McDonald responded to it. Chris Waller responded to it. And we're now going to get it sooner rather than later. So it was a shame that we didn't have it for the Caulfield Cup. But we're very close now to the gates reopening and that similar sort of feel that they had for the Everest.
The crowd, it made watching it on TV feel more real.
Yeah.
Like, feel like a race day. Somewhat over-enthusiastic at times, perhaps, that crowd, as Richard Friedman pointed out at one point.
We'll talk more about that a little later, because I think they were pretty well lubricated.
Well lubricated, yeah. One gentleman, Sydney. In fact, I saw, he must have backed the winner and just doused himself in his own stubby of beer, and I thought, gee, that's a move to make when you're wearing a white suit. It sort of stands out a little bit.
Yeah, it was good to get the crowd there. It'll be great to get the crowd back on Melbourne Cup Day. Who knows? Could we even get a crowd on Derby Day? If the double vaccination rates, which we'll talk more about a little later, keep accelerating like they are,
well,
could we hit 80% before
driving,
Derby
now.
Day?
She obviously wants you out of the house because she's pushing hard.
Well, I tell you what, we would all have loved to have been at Caulfield on Saturday to witness in the flesh what we saw, one of the most dominant Caulfield Cup wins in history. Incentivize.
Incentivize goes for home, 250 out. Incentivize races clear. Two lengths in front of Persan, Great House, Nonconformist, Montefilia, followed by Chapada. But Incentivize is coming away. Four lengths in front. And Incentivize, what a star, won the Caulfield Cup from Nonconformist. Dead heat third, Persan or Montefilia.
He is a star, and what a ride too from Brett Prebble. He had ice in his veins, he was uber confident, he rode him like the best horse, and there's no doubt he was. And Brett Prebble, a spring carnival, which is nowhere near over as yet, he has already had 5 Group 1 wins, taking his Group 1 tally to 37. It had been 5 years since he'd won his last Group 1, so 5 year the wait, Brett Prebble, as he joins us. And in, 2 months, you've got 5 Group 1s this spring carnival. Can you believe the ride?
Yeah, that's racing, isn't it? It's quite an extraordinary game. And when you get on a roll, it can really be fruitful.
We saw you. It was kind of ironic, given there was no crowd there, Brett. But when you turned to the crowd that wasn't there, and you said something out loud to the crowd, and I think I know what it was, and you're going to have to bleep out the swear word. You paid tribute to Incentivize. What did you say? But make sure you bleep out the F word.
Yeah, what an effing machine. And I said he's, and that's what he is. He's just a quite extraordinary horse, and the emotions were running high, and yeah, I was, obviously there's no one there, they'd probably hear it, but yeah, it was, what a special day.
Brett, it helps when you're on a machine, but still the role that you've played as a jockey has been so important to Incentivize's success. Do you think you've ever ridden better than you are right now?
That's hard to say. I've had a great success in my career, but I just feel that I'm sort of more mature now, and I sort of handle things a bit differently than I used to, you know? So I think my riding style has not changed too much, but just my mannerism and my way I handle things has definitely changed. So, I think in that sense, I have improved.
Brett, take us through the journey of the race, because there's a couple of little comments that you've made post-race about certain parts of the race where I think you call him Big, the horse, and there was at one point where he just wasn't working around the turn and picking up for you. Were there certain points of the race where you were less confident than others?
Yeah, there was a little bit. I was just on the point of the turn, because obviously that was our fastest sectional we ran on, and I knew I stepped it up from the 600 to B nearly at his top. So, and obviously he's a big horse, and we're out probably six deep on the turn. And he did want to just creeping out and not really being that comfortable on the point of the bend. And I was sort of mindful, obviously, of we've got pretty strenuous whip rules here, so I was very careful to not to obviously raise the whip on him too early before the turn. But I was mindful that I wanted to keep him balanced and keep him on his right leg as well. So I showed him that, and when I did that, I felt him sort of come back under me, not under me, but sort of just keep his momentum and keep going where I wanted him to. And he felt, and then I was fine. But just there was that stage on the point of turn when he was not 100% comfortable at his top, when he was probably running 11.5 seconds a furlong. That's when he gave me some slight doubt, but then it was quickly gone.
He seems an incredible horse, Brett, because it's almost like he just gets into that rolling rhythm where he can keep that speed and maintain that speed. The strongest every race he runs in is at the end, at the finish line.
Yeah, well, that's just, he's obviously just got an amazing stamina and amazing lungs where other horses can't maintain and hold that level of sprint that he does for the half mile. Like, he builds and he holds, where a lot of horses, they'll sprint probably faster than him for 250 metres, but it dies and then they can't maintain it, where he can maintain a strong sort of 12 seconds for the last half mile every furlong, or even inside 12 seconds. So that's where he sort of he'll win most races, because he doesn't weaken, you know, it doesn't come off.
Brett, it was kind of interesting the way that the tipsters and the speed mappers analysed the barriers. So as soon as you and Delphi drew the car park, the first reaction was, oh, gee, that's going to make it tough. And then everyone started going, no, hang on a minute, he'll glide across and he can run it on his own terms and there's no horse on his outside. And suddenly it became a positive. But we were talking to Dwayne Dunn earlier in the day on Saturday, and he said the others have to kick up. They have to at some point make a decision collectively to make your life a little bit difficult. When you sprung the gates, were you sort of mindful that there was one of two scenarios, that either you would glide across eventually, or two or three might make your life very difficult, given you were the 6-4 favourite?
I knew, you know, was not going to be a glide across, that's for sure, because I've ridden in probably a dozen Caulfield Cups, and it's not the most pleasant start to ride from if you've drawn sort of probably inside 12, I reckon. It's really, you've got to be on your game, and it's never just a flowing sort of race to go down to the first turn, because it's everyone's trying to get that position as soon as they can and not be obviously caught wide. In Australia, you get pretty crucified if you do. So I felt that I got him up to a speed where he was comfortable, and I was still sort of running about 6th or 7th position, and Damien's horse, he's quite aggressive horse on the bridle, so I was mindful of the fact that he was always going to be stronger and harder to sort of position than my horse was going to be, because he can reverse park if I want him, in a sense, and he's just a really adaptable horse that you can ask him to go fast and bring him back quick without him using his energy and pulling. So once Damien sort of was in front, I was going to always be sort of on his back or trying to get him behind him if I could, because he was going much stronger than my horse. So, and then when Linda sort of wanted to pop off, which I was very happy to let her go and get a backside in behind her. That was sort of a really crucial part of the race. I felt that that was that sort of a strong headwind for us from that 2,000 metre start and all the way up to the 1,200, and I got that cover, which was pretty critical, I felt, on the day. And then once I got to the top of that 1,200, well, then that's it was sort of more of a tailwind, so I was using the wind from the 1,200 to make my run as well from the 1,000. So it really, it was a, you know, I thought of it, I had lots of ways how I was going to ride it, and that's how obviously I wanted to ride him, and it worked perfectly, and yeah, it was pretty special.
Brett, the countdown begins now to his next challenge, the Melbourne Cup, and penalties and whatnot that will come out in the wash in the next 24 hours. How excited are you about that next challenge and the addition of a little bit of extra weight, you would think, but also, you know, a handful of overseas raiders.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, it's an, you know, obviously last year, when he's not going to be easy horse to get past. You know, he's a strong galloper and he runs at 32 strong. We're assuming our horse does, and I believe he will. But you know, until you go out and run the 32, you don't really know where they really get it. But I'll be quietly confident he's going to. He doesn't seem like he's ever going to stop us. So. You know, but it's basically once you go and race over those distances, and you know you really can fulfil that trip and win over it. But obviously I'm very excited. I'm mindful of how Pete said he's pulled up, which you know hopefully he bounces and he a few days down the beach or whatever he will get a bit of swagger back in his step, which he does, and hopefully he's healthy. You know that's the hardest part now. But to keep him healthy and get him to there on that form that we had him on Saturday.
All right, let's get down to it. How much weight should he get? How much weight would you be worried about? If he got 2.5 kilos to take him up to 58, would that be a bridge too far? Most people are probably thinking maybe 2 kilos. What are you thinking, Brett? You reckon 1.5, Sharky?
Just give him the cup now. Should have some weight taken off him now, don't you, Brett?
Yeah, I thought if you got a key on us, generally, it's serious weight. Like, I'm not sure the last one that's carried 57 or above to win that Melbourne Cup. I'm not sure. I haven't done the stats on that sort of thing. But, that's a serious horse's weight. And, he is a serious horse, but, he's still entitled to his chance of winning, isn't it? And then being crucified.
Yeah, there's got to be life beyond it too. I think the handicap has to realise that it can't be the end game. Like if he's got that and he wins it, then that's the end of those bids again.
Just it's about setting a weight that's a challenge, a real challenge, rather than stopping the horse. That's the difference. It's a balancing act.
And a career ender at handicap.
Yeah. Look, Maccabi Diva's the last horse to carry 58, and she was a mare, obviously, as well. So with the 2 kilos, and then Might and Power had 56 and 97, and Protectionist 56.5 in 2014, Twilight Pome at 55.5. So 57 kilos, if he gets 1.5 or 57.5, that's rarefied air for winning a Melbourne Cup.
It is. And a lot of it's relative to their opposition as well. So, hey, Brett, you told us you'd knock off Zaki in the Might and Power Stakes with Probabile, and you were spot on there. Just a couple of things with the Cox Plate next week with Probabile. She failed in it last year, but she got stuck on the wet patch of the track, and she's a year older. Half the people wanted to hang Willow out to dry for his ride on Zaki, and everyone else said, I don't know what the problem was, but there was some sort of an issue with Zaki. Are you confident you can knock him off twice in a row?
Good horse has overcome situations. He didn't. He has a kink in his armour, and I was really confident that this hard track would definitely be a bit of an undoing of the horse. I felt that he felt stand down when I was there, and that was a more forgiving sort of surface than it was at Caulfield. So the dry when the weather stayed the way it did, I felt that Fogville could really... It really lifted her game because she died on a run at Sandown, and I knew she'd come on from that, and she did. And the same again, she died a little bit, and in the last run, I reckon she'll really come on from that. And obviously, if the track races are good for or better, like she's pretty serious horse. She's a serious weight for age horse now. You know, she's they'll know she's there. Well, fitness wise, I think she'll be as hard as she can be there. She's been over the 2000. She's had that run under her belt now, and she went there. She hit the front last year at 200. It was on a soft track, so she does not really wasn't her best sort of footing. So she's good enough to win. Luck comes into that race a hell of a lot, and I'm really looking forward to it. This is one of my rides I'm quietly confident about.
And Brett, just a quick one on Saturday. Do we just forgive Kapalua Sunset? Nothing went right. And then you rode El Patroness as well and the Norman Robinson, who was really big. Are you still in Kapalua Sunset's corner for an Oaks if she heads that way?
I'm not sure what they're doing. Obviously, they've let that settle. But they're both very good horses. And Kapalua Sunset, she basically had a barrier trial, you know. I wanted a backside because she can get a little bit aggressive. I got that, got dragged from box seat to second last on the home turn. So it's just a forgive run, and you know, I couldn't do nothing about it. You know, I go away kicking myself that, you know, you got odds on favourite, gets rolled. But what do you do? You know, that's racing. It's Caulfield. Caulfield is quite a tricky track like that. Sometimes the box seat can be the hardest place to get out of there. And that was that was there to be seen on Saturday.
Just one final one on the Cox Plate. Who are you more worried about, Zaki or Animo or something else?
None of them until I see the barriers, to be honest. I don't think there's a race until I like setting the barrier, and then I make those sort of decisions, really. I think it's very important for me when I do my form. So we might talk on Thursday, and then I'll give you my heads up.
Well, we'll have a chin wag on Thursday.
You can tune in tomorrow, Brett, because we'll be simulcasting the barrier live at tomorrow at racing.com
Tuesday,
after the field is announced. Well done, Brett. Another Group 1, another major, only a couple of sleeps or a couple of weeks to go now until maybe he could follow in the footsteps and become the 12th horse to do the famous Caulfield Melbourne Cup double.
Thanks very much.
Brett Prebble joining us there. After 9 o'clock, we're going to have Daniel O'Sullivan with the ratings, and he sent me through a little snapshot of what they are. Oh my, that Caulfield Cup. Wait until Dan reveals what the ratings are. And
don't
what,
tell Greg Carpenter.
What he, no, you, if you're on incentivised in the Melbourne Cup, 1.5 might be light now, Sharky. Wait until you hear what Daniel O'Sullivan has to say. We'll debate what weight penalty he'll get in a moment. After the break, though, let's find out how the horse has pulled up once again today. Catherine Coleman, assistant trainer to Peter Moody, will join us after this.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Great to have your company on this post-Caulfield Cup Everest Verdict. We are talking about incentivise. Peter Moody, he did the rounds of the media yesterday discussing incentivise, how he's pulled up, and also what weight Moods thinks should be given as a penalty after that win in the Caulfield Cup.
It's the first one of the three runs that he has felt, you know. So, you know, the next week will be interesting to see how he bounces back. This is another thing I've got to learn about him. I would think the way he has pulled up, and I'm talking out of school here because I haven't spoken connections, it would probably totally rule out any chance of him backing up in the Cox Plate. My thoughts now would be towards a Melbourne Cup if he bounces back. If he doesn't, he's done the job that we've asked him to do. What weight's he going to be asked to carry? What sort of penalty he does attain for yesterday's win? Probably going to be his only ever chance to go to a Melbourne Cup. I want to have a genuine live hope in the Melbourne Cup more than anyone, but in a short space of time, this horse has been too good to me to just take him to the races for the sake of taking him there. He'll only go to Flemington if he's in tip-top shape, and I believe he can win the race.
Well, that was Peter Moody yesterday, and there's no doubt that the horse will come first. Catherine Coleman will be able to tell us exactly how incentivise is this morning and maybe even what the celebrations and big moods was like the morning after. How are you, Catherine? Congratulations.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, very, very good feeling on Saturday.
Now, I read a piece yesterday where Peter basically just stayed like a statue watching the horse career away to win the Caulfield Cup. Were you anywhere near him on Saturday? What was he like?
Well, we've sort of developed a little bit of a routine now that we don't want to break. So he sort of comes and speaks to Brett, and then I leg Brett on, do the pre-race interview, and while I'm doing that, Pete goes off and hides somewhere and watches it by himself. So I didn't want to break that habit on Saturday, so I just left him alone and I watched it in the mounting yard with his strapper Will.
Catherine, what's he like in the lead up to a race? We sort of watch from the outside and we've got an idea that he's, you know, this gruff sort of doesn't say anything, but is there an emotional side or a stressful side that you experience that probably the rest of us don't see?
I think he copes with the pressure very well. I mean, I'm sure he's experienced enough of it with Black Caviar back in the day, but he was very good on Saturday. He was sort of up and about all morning at track work, and a couple of the boys that come in and ride for us, sort of Jason Benbow and Brian Higgins, they both said, oh, geez, he's in a very good mood this morning, and we were a little bit worried that the only way was going to be downhill and very fast, but he stayed very good all morning, so full credit to him for that.
Hey, Catherine, what's your gut feeling reading Moods? Those comments yesterday, obviously pretty much eliminating the Cox Plate, but also not committing yet to the Melbourne Cup because it's all about the horse. What's your gut feeling in the stable about, because this is such a precious horse that's come your way and Moods doesn't want to ask that one question too many. What's your gut feeling about the Melbourne Cup?
Well, look, I think we took heart this morning. He sort of ate really well last night, and he was really bright and alert and a really happy horse this morning. So that was good to see, and I know that that's sort of exactly what Pete wanted the horse to show him. You know, yesterday morning he was still very pleased with himself, the horse, that is, but he was a little bit more tucked up, and he knew that he'd been to the races and had a reasonably tough run. So it's just really nice to see him, you know, sort of start to bounce out of that, which is what we needed to see if we are going to head towards the Melbourne Cup. So he will head down to Lauriston Park for a few days today, and, you know, that'll just enable him to go out in the paddock and go to the beach and sort of just have a few days of R&R, and then we'll get him back here later in the week and get to really sort of see where we're, how we're going.
It's incredible, isn't it, that Peter's been back less than 12 months. He started the stable from scratch again. Now, he's got 56 Group 1 wins, but that was his first major. And now he's got a 6-4 favourite in a Melbourne Cup. The buzz around the stable must be phenomenal. And to have a horse that could be one of Australian racing's next superstars, is everyone pinching themselves down there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think for a lot of us, it still probably sort of hasn't fully sunk in. You know, it's all a bit surreal, and especially when you hear people start comparing him to Northerly and Might and Power and horses like that, you know, that's when you really start pinching yourself. But, you know, he's got a long way to go before he's on par with two horses like that. But, yeah, it's pretty special. And I think on Saturday what sort of topped it off for everyone here was having Oxley Road win the last, and that's sort of a horse that we've had the whole way through, and you know, the guys here have done a mountain of work on him, getting him there, and he can be a bit of a pushy bugger, and I'm sure he drives everyone mad sometimes, but just seeing him get that win on the board, that I think that meant a lot to a whole lot of the staff here as well.
And even at Horsham yesterday, there was a horse that had won three in a row that won its fourth race in a row at Horsham yesterday, and Sarah tweeted that it was just a nice big road trip and so on. Take us behind the stable door. Like, as Michael said, Moody came back from scratch, and in many ways he started at the same level of everyone else second time around, and now he's got to where he is. And my kids used to go down there on a Sunday and help you guys out for a little while, and then they got sick of getting there at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's very, for all his laid-back character, it's a very military, regimented, spick-and-span operation, isn't it? There's no stone left unturned down there at Moody Racing, is there?
Yeah, that's it. You know, Pete himself is just such a hard worker, and I think that sort of drives everyone around him to do the same. You know, we want to try and keep up with the boss, so everyone just gets in and you know, does their best, and that's, I just think it's that environment that, you know, people get in here and they want to work for him, and yeah, it just creates a really nice team environment around the whole place, and I think the horses sort of thrive off that as well.
All right, Catherine, last question, what weight penalty should he get?
Oh, well, I think Pete was pretty on the money yesterday. Surely you sort of can't penalise him too much more than what Very Elegant received last year, hopefully. So,
half a kilo.
Fingers crossed it's not too much, and then we can line up.
All right. Good on you, Catherine. Well done on the weekend.
Thanks very much.
I think she's even laughing at half a kilo for incentivise. We'll talk after the break to Daniel O'Sullivan, J-Mac as well, counting down to the Cox Plate and that phenomenal win on Nature Strip in the Everest. A heap of SMSs, I'll get to those, about what you think incentivise should get. All that's still to come on The Verdict.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Great to have your company once again on The Verdict. Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey, a lot of SMSs coming through here. Hello, guys. Brett Preble is my new favourite jockey. Just love the way he goes about it. He and his horse this spring have put 20,000 in my Skyrocket.
Oh, look at that.
We're only halfway through. No wonder he is your favourite jockey. If I ever meet him, Brett Preble will not be paying for any drinks. Well done to that RSN listener.
Yes.
Back Preble. And you won't need to worry about the rest of it. Now, here's another one here. What a motor incentivise has. He started that run 1,600 metres out, maybe about 1,200 metres out. Another one here. What do you penalise? This is an interesting one here, Sharky. What do you penalise incentivise on? How he won it or who he beat?
Both?
Oh, yeah, I think it's both, isn't it? It's relevant to the field that he beat, and it's also the performance compared to his best.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult to see, is it reputation, hype, boom, the rating, and what he's done, or what he could do.
You can't handicap a horse on hype. You can only handicap it on what the horse has done, and relevant to those that it's beaten. And also, there's a handicap. It's not just Incentivise that's been handicapped for the Melbourne Cup. It's the other horses. So it's relevant to those other horses at the weights.
If you're handicapped solely on a highest performance rating, then the risk is you leapfrog a horse from nowhere to weighted out of everything in a single bound. Because a rating is the ratings that the Daniel O'Sullivans and others use, I imagine, are different than the rating criteria that Greg Carpenter uses. Because I just can't imagine that a handicapper can suddenly, you know, it takes a lot of handicappers 3 or 4 years to get their way up to being that sort of, like the Doremuses and that of this world, they were going around for 3 years to get to about a 57 and a half.
And that's the quandary. He's only won 3 Group 1 races, and he's won 9 in a row now, but the first 3 of those were, you know, benchmark races in Toowoomba and Gold Coast.
Well, so, what will be fascinating, because Greg Carpenter's a good explainer. When he does give him
12 o'clock today, it will be handed down.
Whenever he does give him what he gives him, there will be a thorough explanation.
He's got to have a fair line, Carps, because we want him to run in a Melbourne Cup. We want the fairy tale and the storyline of Incentivise heading to a Melbourne Cup as well.
Absolutely.
I wonder what Daniel O'Sullivan thinks he should get. A lot of SMSs saying he should get 2 kilos, 2.5. Mick Sharkey thinks 1.5. I think about 2 is probably where he's going to land. Daniel O'Sullivan joined us. Morning, Daniel. How are you?
Yeah, hi guys. Really good. Still at a high after the weekend.
You've been on Incentivise's bandwagon for a long time with what he's been doing up in Queensland and the ratings, and you earmarked him a long way out and you weren't disappointed. What were the figures that he hit in the Caulfield Cup?
So the Caulfield Cup on my ratings, 109.5. That's normalised to weight grade, which is the way I do all the ratings post-race. So that's two-thirds of the length better than what I assessed him in his Pats Cup win in Brisbane. And to put that into some context, I mean, 109.5 is a world-class performance. I think that performance, if we're talking about one-off performances rather than a total body of work, that performance should put him in the top 5 of the Longines, you know, world's best racehorse rankings, which have issues, but there's something we still refer to on the next edition with those. And at 109.5, I mean, it puts him competitive with all of the sort of, you know, world-class horses we're seeing at the moment over that trip, like Adair and Mishriff and even the horse that won the ARC recently, Tulcado Tasso, I think it was. So I think at that level of performance, Incentivise would have fought out the finish of that race with that horse. So, look, it is one-off, but, yeah, go on.
Just on that, and that bit you just said then about it being a one-off, we're trying to work out how Greg Carpenter works this out. Just because he's got a one-off rating or a peak performance rating that's up there with a Mishriff or something like that, that doesn't necessarily mean that Greg Carpenter would give him the same sort of weight as a Mishriff, does it? Because of the body of work. And what factors do you think he will use in trying to, you know, you've got your very accurate rating, but does that necessarily reflect what Greg Carpenter will give him as a re-handicap?
It's a little bit hard to say. I mean, there's such a history of the Melbourne Cup. It's almost, I believe, whatever weight a horse gets, you can always pull references to say that it's right or wrong. I mean, you could give him 1.5 kilos and draw plenty of comparisons to where that makes sense. You could give him 2.5 kilos and also find references in history to make those comparisons. I think off the performance he did and just looking at where he would rate if he repeated that Caulfield Cup performance at the weights in the Melbourne Cup and previous you know, winning years and things like that, I think 1.5 kilos would be reasonable. 2 kilos you couldn't argue with. I think sort of 2.5 is probably, you know, really pushing the boundaries of what I think would sort of be fair and balanced. But look, that's Greg's job, and he's obviously very experienced at it and does a good job. So we'll all be tuning in to hear it, I guess.
And we've got to remember, he's already got a 2 kilo penalty after he won the Maccabi Diva, and Dean Lester sent a message saying his first group won at weight for age, beating a Cox Plate winner, standardised his weight rating straight away. And I think the connections feel, whether it's right or wrong, that because he's been weighted up to 55 and a half with that 2 kilo penalty in a Caulfield Cup, he's less likely to get a bigger weight penalty because he's already got that 2 kilos. Is that something that you think could be the case as well, Daniel?
I think it should be, because obviously the weights were released after the Maccabi Diva this year, so that has that already taken into account. So I guess we're really working off the fact that he won the Turnbull and then he's won the Caulfield Cup so impressively. But I think there also has to be some reference to the Melbourne Cup itself and what history says. I mean, handicaps are about theoretically giving horses a roughly equivalent chance of winning, and the context of history paints a clear picture about how difficult it is to carry big weights. So I think, that's something that I'm sure Greg will take into account. I've heard him comment on that in the past about horses and how previous horses at certain weights have gone, and he's factored that in. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I mean, we're all, debating over a half a kilo here, half a kilo there type of thing, and you could say, well, it doesn't really make much difference. But, look, those weights do play a role in a big race like the Melbourne Cup, and I think we all obviously want to see the horse run. And there's probably two different answers when you say, what would we like to see the horse get and what should he get?
And that, I'll just clarify, it wasn't a penalty that he got because, as you said, the weights hadn't come out, but he was pretty much, and Carpenter, I think, admitted that he probably would have been on 53.5 if he hadn't won the Maccabi Diva before the Caulfield Cup weight set, and he went up to 55.5 as well. Are we talking semantics here? Does it matter? If he gets 57, 57.5, can anything beat him if he runs up to that in a Melbourne Cup?
Oh, look, obviously nothing out of the Caulfield Cup. You couldn't imagine anything turning the tables on him there. But if he was to get, let's say, 57.5, look, it would put him sort of slightly above the average of the sort of Melbourne Cup winners over the last sort of 5 or 6 years, but it certainly wouldn't make him unbeatable if we were to look at previous winners of the race. Now, the question would be whether there's anything else in the race coming that would match up to some of those past winners, like a Cross Counter, like a Rekindling, or Protectionist. I mean, he was a seriously elite performance, or like a Fiorente. Those sort of horses, if incentivized, got 57.5 or 58, those sort of horses would have potentially sort of just nutted him in a Melbourne Cup, I think, at the weight, of course. So that's why I think, there has to be some reference to that. And as a punter and an analyst, that's what I sort of look at. And that's where I think that, a weight like 57 is probably a reasonable weight off his Caulfield Cup win, because it puts him around a level that is certainly capable of winning a Melbourne Cup in a lot of years, but in other years, he perhaps wouldn't win. So I think that's a reasonable balance between giving him a valid chance of winning the race.
In assessing the 109.5, you probably had to obviously had to assess the field in that he beat by the margin, and I thought it was an extremely weak Caulfield Cup. Outside of Incentivise and one or two others, the tail was extremely long, just as it is for the Melbourne Cup, so it's a bit apples for apples. Is it a little bit of a slightly sobering element with his performance that, well, I don't know what your view was, but that he maybe beat up on a substandard field?
Look, there's an argument for that. I mean, I think every year there's a long tail in the Caulfield Cup, certainly from a punter's point of view. I mean, there's a massive group of horses that you give no chance to, even though and history sort of proves that correct, even though a lot of people can argue a case for them in the race. But look, for me, it well and truly adds up. My process sort of factors in two things. That's the clock and different measures and cross-checks and balances around what they did there. Was certainly strong on the clock, just superb sustained speed, superior stamina from that horse. And then we start to look at what the clock tells us in terms of a rating, and then start to line that up against the field, where you're taking into account margins and weight differentials and things like that, and that's an important cross-check and balance. If the clock tells you that every horse ran 5 lengths than it ever has, better than it ever has before in a race, then clearly that's not a reliable and accurate indicator. In this race, the clock for me provided a really good fit and balance with what I would have expected from all the other horses. And I mean, a simple reference is just take a horse like Nonconformist, who's flying in career best form, come off that, you know, good run at weight for age against a horse like Probabil, who's got well-established form lines. You know, Incentivise has given him 4 kilos in weight, I think, and beat him 3.5 lengths. So that's like one simple reference to say that on the quality of form that Nonconformist was in, then it's pretty hard to argue against an elite performance from Incentivise, especially when the clock also backs that up.
And Daniel, just a quick one. How did Nature's Trips Everest rate?
I guess in saying that Incentivise was an elite world-class performance, to be honest, the Everest rate a little bit down for me. So Nature Strip 106.5. He's been to 111 before, which is about 2 lengths better than that on Saturday. They went out pretty strong. The time was good, but in the context of the speed they went, it was just sort of solid Group 1 weight for age. It certainly wasn't world-class elite that we've seen Nature Strip do before. And I think that's also backed up just by the margins. I mean, it was a fairly compressed finish. You've got horses like Lost and Running and Trekking with, you know, around 2 lengths off the lead there. Also sort of backs up that, you know, probably wasn't world-class on the day. And as I said, then when the clock also lines up and everything's sort of consistent, it leaves you with that mark. But look, it was still a tremendous performance. Really fitting, I think, for that horse to add that victory to his CV. I mean, he's got a phenomenal record in the big grand final races like TJ Smith's and the sprint up straight and things like that. So, not as strong as we perhaps thought, but all you've got to do is beat the horses you're up against on the day, and he did that, and it certainly added to what I think was, you know, one of the more sort of memorable days we've had in recent times in Australian racing.
There's no doubt about that. Daniel, fascinating as always to get all of your ratings. Appreciate your time this morning.
Cheers, guys.
Daniel O'Sullivan there. All right, so just wrapping up on the Caulfield Cup, we've got to talk about Nonconformist. He ran out of his skin.
Huge run.
Well done to the team. And you feel a little bit for Graham Big and the connections. They've run into possibly a freak, and he's been enormous, hasn't he?
To be fair, though, it was the right year for him to try it. You know, it wasn't a strong Caulfield Cup. Nonconformist had been beautifully prepped. They played the handicap game for 12 months, and... you know, barring one horse, they won, didn't they? They got a great result. 900s jumped in. I know Graham Begg would prefer the trophy on the mantelpiece, but still, I think it's a tick in the box for Nonconformist having run well 2,400 metres. I would love to see him go to the McKinnon. I think that'd be a really nice race for him.
He's going to the paddock.
He's going to the paddock?
Yep. Matty Never just had a quick chat to Graham Begg, said he's pulled up brilliantly. Going to send him to the paddock. And
Australian Cup, you'd assume then in the autumn.
Australian Cup would be brilliant. He might run into a horse called Incentivizer. You never know. What did you make of the Beaten Brigade in the Cup, Matty?
Nonconformist was good. Ma Eustace of Freaks, Persan, in another grand final, runs out of its skin. You know,
well, his grand final is still 2 weeks off. The Melbourne Cup's where he'll be peaking.
But the rest of them... you know, in a normal year when the wave of internationals comes, you would be totally dismissive of the run-through of the Caulfield Cup because it was an average edition and a lot of them ran average. But you look at the Melbourne Cup market, they're all there. You know, every single one of them's in the market just about. So,
well, I can't see anything that finished behind him getting close to Incentivise on Saturday. Maybe it could be a Grand Promenade down in the weights or the International Sharky.
Grand Promenade's the one. If Grand Promenade had been in that race, he would have won the clearest of seconds.
Yeah.
The clearest of seconds.
Bold going, staying horse. He'll be there and in contention. Then you've got, really, you're looking at Spanish Mission.
And I'm not away he goes. I don't think Stradivarius form is good form for Melbourne Cup at all.
He's pretty good on the weekend again. Well, maybe not Frankie's
best ride. He's a Yates. What's a good one? He's not an American.
Gold trip going to the Melbourne Cup after the Cox Plate.
Well, that's what the door has been left ajar. Like Sir Dragonette last
interesting
year.
Interesting horse going to a Melbourne Cup.
SMS coming through. Hey, boys, in years to come, I see Nonconformist, Haylist, Hartnell and Stewie McGill sipping a cuppa in a retirement home, cursing the era they were born in. That's from Keeney.
That's not bad, Matt.
Very good.
Stewie McGill.
And Hartnell. And Hartnell with a blanket on his lap in a retirement home.
Stewie McGill's had an interesting year, hasn't he?
Hey, we need to take a break. On the other side of this, we're going to talk about the Everest, the win of Nature Strip. J-Mac is in town getting ready for the Cox Plate ride on Zaki as well. All that's still to come on The Verdict.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
Nature Strip at the 300 metres, two lengths clear from his old sparring partner Eduardo giving chase. It's Nature Strip in front of Eduardo. Classique Legends rattling home. Nature Strip in front of Eduardo. Nature Strip kept going. Eduardo. Mask Crusaders jumping out of the ground. Just missed. Nature Strip clings on. He's king of the mountain this time. Nature Strip from the fast finishing Mask Crusader and Eduardo.
Yeah, getting a little bit emotional for a change. So, just a great race. It's just captured the imagination of so many people inside racing and out, and what better way to get out of COVID than race day? Yeah, I could feel it was a little bit different, obviously. But yeah, when he crossed the line, and it certainly hit home that it's a big race that's taking over Australia, and the importance of new ideas and making sure racing's portrayed in the right way. Just didn't panic, really. So we kept it pretty simple. We obviously started later with him, and just there, him do the rest. My team at home. Not just with Nature Strip, but the whole team, and Stuart, who rides and work, and Gary, who's strapping him today because Stuart can't be here, and just a great story, and that's what our team's about. We just work away and win some big races.
Well, there's no doubt it was a party that was going on in Sydney. You can hear in the background after Nature Strip finally won the Everest, his third attempt, takes his prize money now to $15 million. Six times Group 1 winner, a couple of TJs are now in Everest, and it was a lovely ride by J-Mac. And he said on the morning, he's never woken up as confident that a horse would win a big race. And that's exactly what happened. I wonder how he's woken up this morning in Melbourne. How are you, J-Mac?
Morning, Michael. How are you?
Very well, mate. Congratulations. Is that one of your most satisfying wins on Saturday?
Oh, yeah, it's well up there, that's for sure. Obviously, just have a great connection with Nature Strip all the way through. Ridden them mostly in every start, and been a model of consistency this preparation, even last preparation, so he definitely deserved it and was good to see.
Mate, welcome to the last lingering days of lockdown down here. The contrast is now there, isn't it, between Melbourne and Sydney, and when we're about to come out of it, and I was thinking about your reaction post-race where you sort of just collapsed in the saddle almost and the emotion overtook you, and you could also, we could also hear the crowd roaring, and we heard them when the gates opened as well. How big a role did the crowd play in the show on Saturday and even the emotion? Chris Waller obviously felt the crowd in his emotion, and it seemed that most of your emotion came from Nature Strip and the crowd.
Yeah, for sure. It was great to see people back at the races, obviously, and it definitely gives you, I think, for all the jockeys out there competing, it gives them an extra kick and obviously gets the day going pretty quick. Obviously, it's been a long 18 months, obviously a bit tiresome at times and a bit boring, but it was great to see a big crowd, a rowdy crowd at the races there on Saturday.
James, was the emotion as much celebration of the horse and the fact that he's able to tick that Everest box? And you mentioned that after the race that, you know, yep, people wanted to knock him because he'd been there before. That sort of tells me that you see the Everest, look, this is the pinnacle for a sprinter. And if you're going to be a great sprinter, you need to be winning the Everest. Did you feel like it was...
Without doubt, it was... Well, he's won the Daly sprint up the straight in great style. He won the TJ in great style. It was just the Everest that eluded him a little bit, but he's never had a preparation like this one. It's just been absolutely faultless, and if he was ever going to win one, and like I said before the race, if whatever beats him will win the race, and if he gets beat, he just won't be good enough, and it was simple as that. And he was obviously a wrecking ball there on Saturday. He set up a strong tempo and still held on, so he deserved it. He's been a great sprinter for several years now, and I just think he's very proud of the horse.
They were the best of the best, the fastest horses we've got on offer. And Matt and I were sitting here watching the race on Saturday, and that first 200, when he just seems to be going at half speed, yet you know how quick they are going. Can you tell us what it feels like to be on Nature Strip when he is at full bore?
Do you have to grab a bit of mane coming out of the gates, J-Mac, just to make sure you stay on?
Yeah, strap yourself on. You're basically a passenger, really.
He just takes the bull by the horn, so to speak, and obviously is where he impacts his rivals is between the six and the four, where he sets up a tempo that they can't sustain for 600 metres, but he can maintain it for 550, say, and that's where he probably wins his races.
He looked really controlled on Saturday, even leading. Were you surprised that they took a sit on Eduardo?
Yeah, I was. I was pleasantly surprised, actually. But either way, it was going to work out, whether he sit outside him or lead him up. And lucky enough, they made the right move and got the hop on him, so to speak.
Did Mars Crusader come so late that you didn't even get a sense that he was coming when you crossed the line? Was it such a late rush at you that you didn't even feel it?
Oh, I knew he was coming. I knew something was coming.
How far out did you know he was coming?
Probably 50 from home.
And what did you think of the 50?
I probably can't say on radio.
Well, do you hear them coming, or do you have a little glance?
You can feel the energy, and obviously the pace building. Yeah. And obviously it takes to the line, but it was a good result.
You had a good chat with Tommy, who's your mate, as you hit the line. What was the discussion?
He must have thought it was a bit closer than we both thought it was close, but he said it was pretty close, and luckily we got the right on the end of the stick.
Can you feel Nature Strip's muscles rippling underneath you? Like, he is such a beast. But when you're in the saddle, can you feel what's underneath you in that sense?
Oh, he's probably like any other good horse. They're all the same, aren't they? Good will to win. Strong, powerful, fast.
It could be a huge 7 days for you, J-Mac, because you do get reunited with Zaki. It's been a long wait, but you have been given the green light. You're already here. And it's been a fascinating build-up. What have you made of all of it, watching from Sydney, when he got beaten at Caulfield, and then you had a look at his track work at Moonee Valley on Saturday morning as well? How have you seen Zaki compared to what you know so well of when you've been riding him?
Oh, look, I think there's more to offer, to be fair. He won the Sandown race in really good style. He won by a few lengths. Caulfield tripped him up a bit there at the last start, hoping he can bounce back at Moonee Valley on a forgiving surface. Looks like we're going to get a little bit of rain during the week. I only help him. And if he bounces back to his stand down form, well, he'll be very hard to beat. But I think he can. He's obviously, Nate Strip got beaten in his semi-final, so I'm hoping Zaki's done the same.
Dwayne Dunn had some interesting comments on the spring ticket on Saturday after watching him work at the Valley. Ever listen to what Dwayne Dunn had to say?
I had a look at Zaki. On Zaki's track work at Moonee Valley, it was a lot more impressive than what it was last time he got on his Melbourne leg on the home bend. I did have a concern. He wanted to keep swapping and changing up the home straight. To me, that's a sign of something's not quite right there. So, stay tuned. Watch his next piece of work.
What do you make of that, James?
Yeah, I think he hit the nail on the head there. He did look a lot more comfortable there. From reports, Ralphie rides him mostly. He didn't ride him at Caulfield, but I think Craig rode him. But he said he was really happy with his workout, and he's been with him all the way through. So I think Dwayne's got a good eye. He's obviously seen he got around the valley, and it looked to my eye as well that it was very similar. So I think you'll see a good performance from him.
Hang on a minute. You've edited the last bit out there. J-Mac, he also said he's chopping and changing action. He thought there might be some minor issue there. Obviously, that you don't feel that way?
No.
Well, just on the Caulfield run, was it solely the firmness of the Caulfield track? I know you won't go down this road of... A lot of people were bagging Craig's ride, and I saw absolutely nothing wrong with it. But is there a template for how to best ride Zaki?
Not really. He rode him well. He put him in the spot, and he wasn't good enough on the day. But we can only put it down to the firm track and Caulfield track. So.
You scared of Animo?
Moonee Valley.
Animo?
Animo will be hard to beat, yeah.
Well, what are you going to do for 6 days in lockdown?
I don't know. I've got to get two COVID tests done, so we'll get them done and, yeah, just filling time, training and stuff like that. So hopefully it goes.
Uber Eats?
Uber Eats, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you at the Valley on Saturday on Zaki. Well done with the win on Nature Strip.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
J-Mac joining us here from quarantine in Melbourne. It's fascinating, those comments from Dwayne Dunn, because he picked up the comments before he got beaten at Caulfield. I mean, to my eye, and Dean Lester, who I would respect more than mine, I thought he actually looked really good on Saturday morning, that piece of work at the Valley. What did you think, Shark?
Yeah, it looked fine to me. I guess there's little nuances that we're still learning about Zaki, and the fact is his best work has been on clockwise tracks, so maybe he's still just getting comfortable with left-hand turning tracks.
I got no idea. He seemed to gallop well enough to me.
The other big question is Very Elegant. Frank, a couple of SMSs saying, gee, I thought Very Elegant looked well in the track work on Saturday. This is what Chris Waller had to say about Very Elegant, which was interesting yesterday morning with the guys on Correct Weight.
She had a bit of a flat week after the Turnbull. There was nothing significant. Bloods were only fair, but not bad. And they certainly weren't perfect. Soundness-wise, she's great. And appetite-wise, she's better now. She wasn't eating as much as I would have liked after the race, and now she's eating as much as she was going into the Caulfield Cup last year. So I'm pretty confident that she'll bounce back, but I would like to see her work really well on Tuesday morning without flattening it.
Yeah. Is she the forgotten horse almost now? Because if you had a look at the forecast, it's meant to rain Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Not huge amounts, but it's going to be a trek with give at the Valley, I think, on Saturday.
Is the myth about Very Elegant that she's a street fighter? She looks like a street fighter. She sort of shuffles around like a street fighter. But as soon as they applied the acid to her in the Turnbull for the first half of the race, she didn't handle it. I mean, I know Chris Waller said her bloods are a bit off and all that, but does she need a fast, brutally run Cox Plate to win it? The impression of Very Elegant is she's a street fighter, but for the first time when they put the acid to her in a race, like all those wins in Sydney, I know she won a Caulfield Cup and it did well down here last year.
It was a pretty pressure contest, that Caulfield Cup.
There's probably been four occasions, I think Dean made the point after the Turnbull, that there's probably been four occasions in her career where she sat close to a tempo where they're actually going quite strong, and she's been beaten all four times. So I think they just got the tactics wrong in the Turnbull. They needed to be a pair further back than what they were.
Well, if you had your way, she'd only take on four contenders in the Cox Plate. Now, the Cox Plate field will be revealed tomorrow morning, and the barrier draw.
Will he ever portray anything in an accurate light? That's
the question. We are going to... Hang on, you said... And I've got an SMS here too, Sharky. You can't get away from it. You said that the Cox Plate was going to be like a benchmark 78, and the Eagle was going to be the race of the year. I think it's turned around a fair bit now.
It's fallen apart.
Hasn't it?
So to clarify what I was saying...
Well, what I want is your Cox Plate field.
Well, what I want is the absolute top-tier runners and no fluff. Okay, that's all I said. Whether it's 6 or 10, it doesn't matter. So I just don't want add-ons.
How much fluff is there this year?
Well, there's a fair bit of fluff this year because Incentivise isn't there. So of all the horses in the market, these are the ones I'd probably put in, and these are the reasons why. Okay, Zaki, obvious. Animo, obvious. Very Elegant, obvious. Gold Trip, obvious. State of Rest, obvious. Probabil, obvious. Moonga, obvious. Captivant, you may throw in on the basis that he's a Group 1 winning three-year-old who's the last horse to push Animo, who's the well-backed second favourite. So you can sell that. You can say, yep, okay. If you want Animo, you've got to have the one he just beat. Not a problem. The other one, in a sort of a branding sense, in a marketing sense, even though it won the worst Group 1 ever, this New Zealander, at least it is a New Zealand Group 1 winner. So if you're selling something coming into a Cox Plate...
Call sign Matt.
Scott Gullen understood this because he works at a newspaper. If you're going to sell a race as the race of champions, you've got to have hooks. And even if it's a tenuous hook, Collagen Mav, is that its name?
Call sign.
Call sign.
Collagen.
Well, I wrote it down here. So that's it's probably
you're
a hat.
Just waiting for lockdown to end so you can get your own collagen.
It's probably a hat, right? But at least in the context of an Australia-New Zealand situation, it is a recent Group 1 winner in New Zealand.
Did you just call it a hack?
It's probably a hack. In Cox Plate terms, it's a hack.
Okay.
All right, but if you're trying to sell it as a
how many group has he won three? He's won three Group Ones or four Group Ones.
Yeah, well, mate,
you could win a New Zealand Group, and you've got no what do you call that stuff in your knees? You've got no cartilage.
There's no. I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
You've got no cartilage.
I'd fail the scans. So call sign Mav gets in.
No, but
so you've pretty much, you've got the Cox Plate, it's a fat Cox Plate field.
No, it's about eight. I could probably get rid of the Kiwi. But
so who are you kicking out? No Darlison for you.
He would be on the absolute fringe for me.
Darlison can't run. Surely.
But this is consistent with what I've said all along. So I'm not saying have a six-horse field.
Darlison for you is out?
Darlison will do what he does
probably,
every time.
Probably doesn't make my field on my criteria.
And they're going to have a throw at the stumps, I believe. This is Trav Noonan does a great job each week. Likely Cox Plate field. K.O. Nautique?
Doesn't get in mine.
No.
And Forgot You, the other one.
No. Doesn't fit the criteria
right.
for me.
So, to be honest, I don't think many people would argue with that. I think Darlison might be a bit harsh. I know he hasn't got the Group 1, but he's been racing well.
Yeah, and he's a familiar horse. I could nearly throw him.
He is only doing what Darlison does every other time he races, which is poke around between 6th and 3rd.
But this is all I've ever said all along, Michael, is just keep it at the ones that deserve to be a runner. You don't have to make a weird case for.
All right, we'll get that final field tomorrow and a barrier draw. You can hear it here at simulcastwithracing.com tomorrow at Moonee Valley. Right now, Cox Plate winner?
No, I'd have to have a think. Sorry, I'd have to have a think.
I need to see the track because I'm keen on State of Rest, but he probably doesn't want soft ground. So we're going to wait on the rain.
We'll wait and see. And the barriers tomorrow. All right, quick break. You are listening to The Verdict. More to come on the other side of this.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. A few SMSs coming through here. Masked Crusader, what can they do to fix this horse? He's turning into another Chautauqua. He cost himself the Everest on Saturday.
He is what he is.
It's a tricky one, but he's getting worse. I think that was the worst I've seen.
Remember what happened when they tried to fix Chautauqua?
Yeah.
He just is what he is. He's a get-back, run-on sprinter.
Yep.
You can't reinvent him.
Nothing wrong with that. There's an element of risk when you're backing him.
But it's missing the start by 3 lengths.
Yeah, but that's okay. But that's what he's doing, right? That's him at the moment. So until he decides to jump more cleanly, that's what we're going to see from Masked Crusader.
Who would you back in the Darling? Nature Strip or Masked Crusader?
Nature Strip will kill him.
I don't know. Has Masked Crusader seen the straight?
Nature Strip, like he did in the Daly 2 years ago, he cruises at that high cruising speed. Nothing goes near him. How on earth would Masked Crusader be able to get past him?
Well, he is a brilliant straight track horse, Nature Strip. But, yeah, I don't know about that. First time we'd seen Masked Crusader down the straight as well. Sometimes, it sounds funny, but running down the straight, horses can tag on and be that bit closer.
But the leaders can cruise for longer too because they're not under pressure around turns for positions.
Great
and
clash,
like that,
so. Another little great contest.
Yeah, there you go. That'll be a good
race.
Do
you know what the Everest did highlight for me though? It's essentially the same field as last year.
It's the same field the last few years,
so
really, isn't it?
It works for it, but it can damage it as well if you get bored with it.
We are the home of sprinters and our sprinters are great and all these great sprinters. Well, where are the up-and-coming sprinters?
Well,
where are the emerging?
Discombobulated. The one of O'Shea's failed to handle.
What do you
pressure?
Make of Classic Legend?
So, he was all right.
He was terrific.
He was fine. That's not his ground. He's the top of the ground horse.
He couldn't run on out wide, and he tried to. He was arguably the run of the race, Classic Legend.
Do we have this endless supply?
I think Masked Crusader was the run of the race.
Oh, but he was the flashing eye catcher. Yeah. Classic Legend was first up and was in the mud out wide, and you couldn't make up ground.
Do we have an endless supply of elite sprinters, Matty? Are we as
we're not replenishing them.
As deep as we think we
are? We're not replenishing.
The 3-year-olds are going off to stud, and I don't think we've got the 3-year-olds this year that we have had
gelded,
in previous years.
So unless our sprinters are gelded, then basically it's the same. The Everest field, they might as well start locking in slots for next year. What's coming?
Well, there's not much on the horizon that we've seen.
No.
Especially from the 3-year-old ranks this year.
No.
It's a pretty thin 3-year-old group, both the males and the females.
Does this race then lose something if next year 70% of the field is the same as it was this year, the same as it was last year?
I think the familiarity of the Everest horses helps the Everest against the Melbourne Cup where you don't know half the field traditionally. But are we getting a little bit tired? I mean, is there a potential that we can get a bit tired of these relentless
clashes? Well, it's the TJ Smith. It's maybe what we'll get to see a lot of them again in the Daly. And that, like, it's not the one race. I suppose that was the TJ Smith, wasn't it? But
basically,
there's a bit more of a build-up and hype.
I reckon if we have it
2 or 3
more times with the same cast, we're going to get over it. We're going to get a bit over it.
A lot of
Nature Strip 7, Eduardo's 8, Trekking 7, Guitraz 6. You know, they're not young horses, these things. There's your four of your top six.
A few SMSs coming through just on the crowds, and it was great to see the crowds there and the interaction, but I think the crowds were a little out of control. And Richard Friedman tweeted out...
They're off the leash.
Well,
they were.
But it got
they were
dangerous.
Off the leash,
it got
right.
dangerous for the horses. Like, there were imbeciles running up to the fence that you could see screaming and yelling, and the horses were getting scared walking back to the stripping sheds. Now, Richard Friedman made a good point, saying, well, why the hell don't you just take the horses out through the back?
Yeah.
Where that way they don't need to go past the crowd.
Well, does that tell you that the Everest... This example of the Everest attracted a racing crowd that was desperate to come back for the horse sports, or did it just represent a crowd of youngsters who were off the leash and had a venue to go?
Deliberately aimed at getting new people to the track and the younger generation that are not maybe your Saturday racing fans, but it's a party. That's what it's
aimed at.
Are
they there for the party, or are they there for the horse-related party? Because it's only going to be a successful thing, ultimately, if the people are essentially people who like the races, not just getting together for a... Can I ask you one question about the...
Chair's very squeaky, Matty. Yeah, keep going.
What do you want me to do? Dismantle well, it?
You've only got two chairs in the house.
Well, exactly, you know. It's 10 race cards on feature days. We're coming out of COVID and we're asking people to go straight into these marathons where, Shark, we were watching it on Saturday and... We were finding it a very long day of clutter before we got to the main event. Are these marathons necessary? Have people got the time span? Have we got the time? Have we got the patience? Have we got the attention span? Is there any real merit to having 10 race marathons when we should be showcasing the best of our product at this time of year?
Best race meetings I've ever been to in my life have been at Royal Ascot with 6, and I think, what do they have now, 7?
Yep.
Races, that's it. But the 6 race cards, 2 o'clock start, half an hour between, you are watching elite racing from go to woe. You're not watching benchmark filler content. Like, it's just some of those races, they were just pointless.
Do they actually
why were they
wagering?
There?
Where are you talking?
Caulfield Saturday, Moonee Valley next
You're
Saturday.
You're talking about Caulfield.
Cup week, everything.
Or Sydney.
Well, most of these days, why are we jam? I'm with you, Matt. I don't know why we jam our feature days full
of these.
Are
they better,
these.
Michael, because they've got 10 races?
I think from a club's point of view, it's about
why
increasing turnover. Because Saturday...
Doesn't necessarily...
We're yet to get the figures from this Saturday, but it should be the biggest betting day outside of Melbourne Cup of the year because you've got the two big race meetings. And turnover begets turnover when there's the two meetings
Does
on these major
Does the 10 race cards
days.
Generate necessarily more turnover than an 8 race
Yeah,
card?
What's the turnover on a benchmark 64-style race?
Well, if Michael Brown or Josh Blanksby or Neil Wilson's listening, you can text us and let us know. But, I mean, I would imagine that just... On pure mathematics, if you've got 10 races compared to 9 races, you would think that, well, if you're backing winners, you're going to reinvest.
Mate, I just think you've got a bank for the day. If it's 8 races, it's going to be bet over 8. If it's 10 races, it's going to be bet over
10. I would have bet on the best possible horses, not on junk.
You're backing horses and backing winners, you're going to have a bet in the next race.
Assume that it has a slight...
And if it's not the next race at Caulfield, you're going to Manjo.
So it just feeds addiction, is what you're saying. It feeds addiction.
I don't know about addiction, but it feeds the punters that are punting. And I've sat here every Saturday and watched you. When you're winning, you're going to the next race.
I'm a self-confessed addict. but Michael, the industry is awash with wagering money. It couldn't be richer. It couldn't have more money because it runs night and day, synthetic, every day of the year bar Christmas. Given that that's how it makes its money, shouldn't the prime time be to showcase the absolute best? Why does it need to be a money-gathering exercise like every other day of the year?
Oh, part of me agrees with you because I can't stand the 10 races in Sydney every week when they've got the midway, the highway and everything like that, which is great for the country participants. But personally, I don't have much interest in those races. But on maybe your 5 major days of the carnival or 6 days where it is the big days, I don't mind having those 10 race,
what
maybe
about
9 race
like?
Cards would be
what
better.
What about it do you like?
I just like having the big Derby day or Cox Plate day. Like, I mean, when you've got your 5 major days, maybe for the second tier events, you're fleshing them out. But usually, like Caulfield Cup, now they've moved the 1,000 guineas to the Wednesday, is a little bit different. But usually, like, you don't. What race do you want to pull out a Derby day?
Probably a
Derby
of...
day is different.
No,
exactly.
Derby day is
well, Cox Plate day now it's split because of the Matacado is a little
Plate
bit different.
Day,
but
honestly, Michael,
those big days,
Cox Plate day, is
Cox Plate day
diluted.
Has half the races
because they've
are
moved
rubbish.
Because of the Matacado.
Three or four of the races at Caulfield on Saturday were not worthy.
No, they were thin. They were thin.
Don't you remember what Cox Plate days are like? You sit there through this whole day. It starts at 10:45, and most of the races are not worthy of such a day. Take them away.
I don't disagree in the respect that they are thin there, but I think for a Moonee Valley Racing Club, a Melbourne Racing Club, they are their pinnacle days, and they want to expand it as much as possible.
Mate, they make a fortune off the punt. They don't need to do it.
Well, you tell us what do the listeners think? SMS is 0416 90 50 52. Would you rather 6 or 7 races? I think 9 would be better than 10. And we normally have 8 or 9. We have 9 every Saturday now, don't we? Outside of Carnival. So,
I still think that's a bit much.
I think that's too much too.
A couple of other SMSs coming through. Boys, you haven't even mentioned Colette on Saturday.
Oh, Colette.
She was good. Would she have got
best
close...
Best wet tracker in the
country.
Would
she have got close to incentivise if she hadn't had the hoof abscess?
Oh, who knows? Who knows?
Where do you go now with Colette? Empire Rose?
Well, you look at that weather forecast. Gee, I'd be tempted to go Cox Plate. If the track's going to be wet, she looks like... Look, arguably, she's the best wet tracker in the country. Why wouldn't you have a go at a Cox Plate?
The Irish kickboxer, Sean Kehoe, is that his name? The Melbourne foreman. He said she's fit
Peaky
enough.
Blinders.
She's fit enough to run in a Caulfield Cup. There's no... a Cox Plate.
She would be a wild card in the...
Would Cox you let her run?
If she wanted to, I nearly would.
Well, she's won an Oaks and an Eagle. You can't say no to her.
No, so I would. Yeah. I just don't think they will. I think you... It's 100-1 that you'll run.
Less races, more quality. 10 is best. It's all about greed. So there's a few. 10 races and most were poor, I thought, on Saturday. I want more quality, less races. So they're a snapshot of the SMSs that are coming
through. Because on the
other
hand, you might remember the race clubs were trying to shorten the gaps and make it a more tighter experience. So on the one hand, they want to do that because they understand that people have a busy lives and so on. But on the other hand, we have these marathons at this time of year. To me, it's counterproductive.
SMS, I've been to Royal Ascot. It is so boring. Not many races. What? And you have to wait around all day.
That is the most ridiculous comment I've ever heard in my life.
Comment? I think I agree with it.
Royal Ascot is boring.
Oh, no, not Royal Ascot. No.
Too long between races, not enough races on the day.
Royal Ascot is half an hour between races. And really, how much longer do you want?
But it starts in the morning.
Starts at 2:30 in the afternoon, I think.
Yeah, you don't get there at 10 o'clock in the morning. You get there at like.
Well, not everyone has a bender like you the night before.
It enables you to have a bender and still be fresh the next day.
We need to take a break. Plenty more SMSs coming. Speaking of UK races, we're going to talk about Champions Day. And Sheen Murphy's had a bit of an up and down few weeks after this, and then we'll look ahead not just to the Cox Plate, but we haven't even spoken about the Manicato. Now, how much of an impact is the Everest having on the Manicato? All that's still to come.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
And Trushan is going to back up his win last year in the Champions Long Distance Cup. Bayeed, Palace Beer is digging in, but Bayeed wins! Bayeed is still unbeaten and wins the Queen Elizabeth II stakes. Seal Away and Dubois Honor. Dubois Honor trying hard, but Seal Away will not be denied. And Seal Away for France wins the Champion Stakes after his fifth in the arc. Dubois Honor second.
Oh, it was racing at its best in the UK over the weekend, Champions Day. And Sharky, a few surprises, a few favourites getting rolled. What was your highlight of the meeting?
Probably Bayeed v Palace Pier, and Bayeed, who is the new star on the scene, getting the better of Palace Pier, who had been so tough and not unbeatable, but he's just such a fighter when he's challenged. And
Frankie described him a few weeks ago as the fastest miler he'd ever ridden, Palace Pier.
And an exceptional horse.
These are
Bayeed just
fair dinkum horses.
Ambled up to him. Mm. And look, there was only a neck in it on the line, but He had him beaten there. Seal Away was good coming out of the arc to win the Champions. And that was a really, really good race. A couple of roughies fielded placings there. I think some of them probably felt the strain of a longer prep. Mishriff sweated up pre-race, didn't get his ground. Good to soft, probably soft more likely as the day got on. Adayar was tired after a long prep. Adayab probably didn't run to his best. And then you see Trushan again having the better on soft ground over Stradivarius, who might have run his last race.
He's a rocking horse these days, Stradivarius, seriously.
He really needs good to firm these days. He's a summer horse. When they get into the autumn months, he his dominance is eroded somewhat on the ground. They're weighing up his future now because he's 7 years old and he's been such a warrior for so long.
Just on Champions Day, I mean, we always talk about this is a pop-up race meeting of recent times. It's only been around for 3 or 4 years, but it didn't intrude on anything else. It came at the end of the season, 2 weeks after the arc, and it was a lovely rounding off. So I think it's a good example of something that was implemented that doesn't step on anyone's toes and it actually works.
And it brings to a close the flat season, effectively. And champions of that season, you know, here are all the different form lines from France and Ireland and the UK, wherever you, and the late comers to the scene, it's like Dubai Honour.
It's become
and the
their
Champions
premier race meeting now. It really has because it's the culmination.
It's just a beautiful way to finish off the flat season over there.
Old mate, Bob Baffett, he's allowed to compete at the Breeders' Cup, but he's got to go through all these stringent pre, post-race drug tests, all sorts of things that he has to do.
His horses or Bob?
Hey?
Yeah, Bob's horses.
Bob's horses. That's a bad boy. Bobby has to. His horses have to jump through 50 hoops to be able to compete, and these are the conditions. But there's been enormous.
And it's just him, no other trainers.
No, just him because he's bad boy Bobby. Mm. And there's a lot of backlash saying, even though they've put these rules against him, that it's a disgrace that he shouldn't be competing.
Yeah. Hey, a quick one here. A lot of SMSs about this, Sharky. I've saved it. Sharky, are all the punters that collected on Buffalo River still sickos?
Yes, including me.
That's Brian from Vermont.
Because I sat here and decided I'd be a sicko too. So that just tells you about us, Brian.
Cote d'Azur brings out the inner sicko in everybody.
SMSs, I'm a punter. I'm with 12 races, not 10. I love punting in Hong Kong. More races are better in Hong Kong. I think 6 or 7 is the best. A few others saying that I think happy medium would be 7 to 8. 7 to 8 races is what most are saying. Manicato, we didn't get there. It's a little bit weak because, again, the Everest is impacting.
Weak.
Well, we don't have a great group of sprinters,
do we? No, it's because of the Everest. I'm blaming the
100%, Everest. 100%. We'll talk more about the Manicato, the Cox Plate tomorrow, the Fields and the Barrier Draw. You get to hear it live here on RSN, simulcast with racing.com. Maddie, we'll read all about it today.
Correct.
All right, Sharky, I will see you on Friday.
Oh, it's going to be a large Friday, actually.
It will
Friday morning with you and then Friday night with Gareth and Gator.
Oh, look out.
Keep Gator.
And then Saturday at the Cote d'Azur.
We all remember what happened last year. Yeah. Just keep Gator.
He had 1.5 glasses and couldn't speak. Time for the news. After that, we'll find more winners.